to all the solopreneurs, startup and small business owners. Cheers to you. Those with the courage to set out with an idea and bring it into reality. Maybe very quickly you realize that running a business takes all kinds of skills. Many you have, but maybe some you don't. The Good for Business show is designed to help your business grow by having fun but valuable conversations with the best industry leaders across sales, marketing, content creation, and mindset. So let's get into this week's conversation with your host, Michelle J. Raymond.
Michelle.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Good for Business show. I'm Michelle J. Raymond, and joined today by Jane, who is a performance coach based here in Sydney. In Melbourne, Australia. I'm off to an awesome start. So don't worry, Jane, this is your first LinkedIn Live. See, I've done lots and things happen. So we're all good. So thank you for joining me today. And so I would love it if you could tell people, what is it that a performance coach actually does?
Great question. So that performance coach can mean many different things, but essentially what I'm trained in doing is helping people, taking them from where they are now to where they want to be. And my specialty lies in working with around human-centered leadership development. So things like, you know, building that empathy and those EQ skills that people might not necessarily have, and particularly, you know, with COVID having happened, a lot of people feeling like necessarily have those social skills to be able to feel confident, you know, within the workplace or leading their teams and that sort of thing. So a lot of leadership coaches focus on the what and the external capabilities, but I focus on the who. So really creating a dynamic leader that can lead their teams, lead themselves effectively, because when you have the awareness of who you are, that's when you can really create lasting transformation.
And that's pretty powerful in businesses, right? Because if you've got the right leadership model in place, then you're just going to set your business and your teams up for success. But I want to rewind a little bit because today we want to talk about high performers. So let's start with, what is a high performer and how do I spot one?
Yeah, so let me paint the picture for you. I'm sure you've come across one, Michelle. I'm sure everyone else on the call has.
I'm just going to sit back about my... I've heard about somebody.
Yeah. So basically this person that is a high achiever will shoot for the stars constantly. It's like nothing seems to be out of limits. They work incredibly hard. They never quit. They always seem to be, you know, onto the next project or the next thing before they've even finished, you know, the other five that they might have in the pipeline at that time. They complete far more than the average Joe, and they do things a lot faster than the average person as well. And they're a lot like an energizer bunny. They just seem to be able to go and go and go and go and go until they can't go anymore, though, that is.
No, none of that's familiar to me. No, can't think of anyone like that. So what's like the work experience like for that person? Like, you know, when they're, you know, it's all well and good to be, you know, a high achiever, but when you're surrounded by people in a workforce, like what's it like being at work as a high achiever? What does it look like?
Yeah, so it's probably difficult for both the high achiever and the people on the other end of that. It can often be very stressful. So even though they look like they're, you know, crushing it on the outside, it is usually crushing them on the inside, because they tend to prioritize the results and their achievements and everything else that they're creating externally over who they are as a person. And it's constantly attaining that next hit. It's like, oh, yeah, I need to be doing, and creating that, you know, perpetual cycle of doing that, which can really elevate stress levels, and it can create all sorts of health issues if we're not really tapping into doing that in a way that's healthy and good for us. And the person that, you know, would particularly be a high achiever might look like they are a bit of a control freak and have, I see you laughing again there.
Nope. nothing to see here, Jane. Nothing to see. If anyone else is a high achiever, like unlike me, you know, let us know in the comments. Like, who else is joining in today? I can see, Jane, that Stephanie's like resonating with this as well. She's like probably sitting there nodding her head, going, yes, yep, sounds familiar. Because I know in my own experience, whilst I can be super driven and I, you know, I love to say things are done, you know, and I will be going nonstop, flat out and happy, you know, to work my butt off until I get there. But for those around me that I've worked with, that's not always a fun experience for them because everyone's got different goals in life, right? And so as someone that's managing a team, how do you do it when you've got someone up here, someone here? Like, is that where the conflict comes in?
Yeah, so I think it's about when you're a leader and you're managing that kind of thing, it's about being really aware of your people and their attributes and what they can contribute. Because if you're expecting the person that's, you know, the solid middle player who's, you know, putting in solid work continuously and it's more like a level playing field rather and then comparing them to the person who's continuously achieving and expecting them to have the same output, it's never going to work. So I think it really comes down to tailoring the workload or whatever's happening for that particular person and playing to their strengths and realizing that not everybody can achieve the same things and that's completely healthy and completely normal. So you would prioritize different tasks for those different people, essentially. Yeah.
And we were just talking just before we got started, and I wondered, is it nature or nurture that brings out a high achiever at these kind of levels? Like, and it's not a good or a bad thing or a right or a wrong thing about being a high achiever, but I just wondered, does it come from your environment? Does it come, like, where does it come from exactly?
So that's a really, really great question. And I love talking about this sort of thing. And I'm going to go a little bit deep here, okay? So, keep an open mind, and it's not at all meant to be an attack at anybody. It's just clearly hoping to create some awareness for you guys. So oftentimes the way that we are, or, you know, whatever, the way that we play out things into the world and who we become is designed by the age of seven. So really where the person that we are now is like our inner child is the high achiever, essentially. And that's where it can stem from in terms of childhood. So perhaps you were around a sibling who was always taking the spotlight because maybe they weren't behaving so well, or, you know, there was other issues there that meant they might have had health issues or something like that. And through no fault of your own or your parents, maybe you were put on the back burner and not recognized as much, but then you found an outlet in terms of achieving at school and getting good grades and, you know, winning the sports, you know, achievements and things like this. And
hang on, stop. I'm going to stop this. Are you actually, like, did you do some research in the background? I feel like you're just like going, oh, yeah, I know all about you, Michelle. Like, you know, and I'm sure if anyone else is listening, like, you know, if this is resonating what Jane's saying, like there is moments that I can look back to and say, absolutely. For me, and, you know, we joke in my house, like Lil will always be saying to me, like, oh, yeah, your five-year-old little athletic self. You know, we've spoken about that as well. That's my glory days. You know, that's how I view myself. So it's really, you know, it's, I got a lot of attention from that. I was so good at sport and I would win everything. And then it just became this win everything and no prizes for second is what we joke about in our house.
So, yeah. And that mentality takes over. And it's interesting you say that because I was reading the holistic psychologist's book on how to do the work. I actually have it here with me the other day. It's a fantastic book for anybody who's looking to grow their self-awareness. And she talks about the inner child and the archetype of that, and there are seven different archetypes, and I want to read the high achiever or the overachiever, she says it. So feels seen, heard, and valued through success and achievement, and uses external validation as a way to cope with low self-worth, believes that the only way to receive love is through achievement. And it really can sting sometimes when you look at that. And there's, you know, patterns all throughout, you know, self-worth and how we attain it through all of the archetypes. So it's not just the overachiever or the high achiever, whatever it might be, but we're often conditioned from a very young age that that's how we need to create that love and success for ourselves. And I know for myself personally that, you know, being a high achiever as well, I absolutely love the great qualities that brings, but it also brings, you know, a lot of not negativity, but a lot of stress as well. And I think a really, really key thing is to identify that it's not you, it's your conditioning. It's how you, you know, how you've decided to win in life, basically, or to be seen or to be heard. And a very, you know, funny thing, because I'd always had that sort of mentality and I couldn't figure out where it came from. And after I had moved back to Melbourne, I was staying with my parents and I was having a conversation about them with them. I'd been doing some video work and was just really getting into it, recording and doing all this sort of stuff, and was really proud of my achievements because, you know, this was like a whole new next level kind of thing. And I remember sitting there at the dinner table, and my dad said to me, started giving me unsolicited feedback, and he was like, well, you know, when you do this and you at the end of your sentence, you tend to trail off, you should really do this. And I was like, hang on a minute, wouldn't you just have a good time here? And then all of a sudden it was like, and then I thought, and I got really angry, I got really upset, and I had to excuse myself. And I went over to the sink and I was sort of washing the dishes, and I had a bit of a tear come to mind. I thought, and I went, that's where it comes from. It's not what they say, it's the meaning that we assign to that. So I had related that to, you're not good enough, you need to do X, Y, Z. But when I told my dad about that and I said, hey, look, Dad, that's really, you know, our conversation last night, because we couldn't speak that evening, it caused too much friction. But the next day I went to him and I said, look, this is what's actually happened for me and what played out. And I realized in that moment that when you say things like that, it makes me feel like I'm not good enough, which means that I'm striving and achieving and trying to do more and more and more. And he said, I'm so sorry that you felt that way. He said, that wasn't my intention at all. He said, I see you as such a capable, you know, person that can achieve anything. And I just thought, you know, you had it nailed, so I'd give you a little bit of feedback.
Yeah, I've got a similar story. You did good, but, you know, so I was one of those people that naturally could do a lot of things very well, you know, and so it came easily to me. And my mom would say, oh, imagine what would have happened if you did more training, or imagine if you applied yourself, or you did good, but, you know, like, and that is the driver for me. And so I completely resonate, but I've had a conversation with my mom around that before, you know, she passed away. I was like, you know, this is what it was like for me. And she's like, Michelle, I just wanted the best for you. You're capable of so much. I think you're amazing. But all I heard was not good enough, you know? Yeah. And so can totally relate. Now, Jeff's asked a question down there. So does a high achiever usually suffer from imposter syndrome, or are they immune to it? Well, I'll let you answer this one.
Yes, usually that goes hand in hand, and that was a point that I was going to make later on. And it's funny, because it's like, on the one hand, you have these people that achieve so much, and then on the other hand, they're constantly thinking they're going to be found out, and that they're, you know, they're really not who they are, or that it's like, oh my God, I'm such a fraud. I'm going to get found out. Eventually, someone's going to come to me. They're going to say, you shouldn't be here, and tap you on the shoulder and be like, leave, you know?
Oh my God, it is. Like, absolutely it. And I'm going to do, before I jump back to Jeff's other question, I'm going to do a shout out to Brenda Mellor, who probably touched on my imposter syndrome not that long ago. And how it played out is, I think she's amazing. She's another LinkedIn trainer based in the US, who I just think does an amazing job that inspires me to be better. And I wanted her to come on my Good for Business show. And the invite that I sent to her was, if you're not too busy, maybe if you do this, you know, and just, you know, it was like, and if you want a way out, I'll give you 20, because I was like, I didn't think for a moment that she would be like, of course, Michelle, I would jump at the chance to be on your show. And thank God she's the kind of person that actually said, you know, you got something in your teeth, like, you know, to use her analogy. She was that kind of friend. And then I realized that I'd put everyone else up here, me down here. And I was like, no, actually. And then they were seeing me, you know, on par. I'm not better than anyone else, but, you know, there are a lot of things I do really well. But it was like one of those moments that this year, as far as a teachable growing moment, for me, imposter syndrome is like the story of my life in a lot of ways. My results don't talk to that. If you look at the results that I achieve, and I was just talking to a friend yesterday about our book launch, like, you know, when Lanera and I have launched Business Gold, like it's done super well. But for me, I was like waiting for other people to tell me it had done well. Like, you know, I was like, did we do good? You know, can someone tell me? So I love reviews, you know, and we were just talking before about that. You know, I love when I read the reviews, I'm like, okay, this person said it's good, you know, in my head. And we were talking, like, not everyone gets to write a book. No, you know, very small percentage of people will achieve that. And I was like, but the, you know, until someone else said it was good, I was like, I think, you know, So I'm listening to all of this, and I can see that Stephanie's doing the same. You know, and there are a few other people that are like listening in, just going, yes. So another question from Jeff, and a great one. So can anyone be a high achiever if you find the right motivation and environment? Is it like something that you can switch on in the right place, or, you know, maybe it's, you know, taken away from other people? Like, you know, how does that play out, you know, in every day?
Yeah, great question. So, Jeff, I would say that you can definitely have high performers and you can have people that get to that state, but the differentiation between someone becoming that or a high achiever is that it's already embedded within them, and it's like an internal driver. It's not something externally, and it's like a feeling that they have, and that's like sometimes can be this big deep hole that never gets filled. And the difference being that the high achiever will tend to run on the smell of an oily rag, and that will be, you know, what will just push them through continuously, whereas the high performer will be the energizer bunnies.
The energizer bunnies, yes. And that is definitely it. That resonates, you know, 100%. That's a great analogy.
Yeah. Exactly. But I think it's more the subconscious programming that we have that is driving our behavior, and it's like that's on autopilot, and we're not a lot of people are not conscious of that, or that they can change that. So the difference being that, yes, people can absolutely achieve results, but then when they've gotten their certain goals or they've gotten to where they want to be, then they might taper off or something else might become important, whereas for a high achiever, it's always front of mind and always focused.
Does a high achiever, are they more prone to things like burnout? Like, is that a consequence of, you know, that never ending, you know, strive for this? Is it, you know, because it's almost theoretically unattainable to the level inside here, like, is burnout a problem for high achievers?
Yes, it absolutely can be if you don't approach the situation with, you know, the right kind of awareness and the right approach, essentially. And if you keep burning the candle at both ends, you know, getting up, a lot of them will get up early. They'll work right through until, you know, the late hours sometimes. I was speaking to a leader of he'd been in a big organization for about 15, 20 years, something like that, and just put it simply, he said, I feel intellectually stimulated by the work I do, and I could just do it all day, every day. And obviously that's great, but it's basically unhealthy because you're dropping off other things that are there to help you function properly, like sleep, health, you know, all that sort of thing, and not just causing burnout, but I also notice that it can cause a lot of gut health issues because you're in that constant state of everything's, you know, flighty, so to speak, and it's, you know, creating that sense of urgency and anxiousness, and I've got to keep doing, I've got to be this, and I've got that, la, 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 la. And then, you know, when we're not settled and we're not in that state of that, I think it's I can't remember what it's referred to, homeostasis or something like that.
Yeah.
When we're not in that state often enough, then we create an uneven balance, and then we actually become addicted to that behavior. And it's like without that, we can't function and we don't feel normal. So when everything's calm, or we're on holidays, or we've got time off over Christmas, we're bored. We're like, what's going on? Like, what can I do? I'm like to do, you know?
Yeah, it's really funny because for me, I'm kind of an all or nothing, you know, like a bit manic around that kind of side of things, you know. And I think sometimes it's because when you're up like this, the only other opposite to count, you know, balance that out is to do nothing, you know, like, so it's like this all nothing, you know. And so and like you, I've had to learn, you know, to put some boundaries around sleep is probably, you know, making sure that I cut things off at a certain time, because there's always something to do when you own a business, like, and especially being a new business and a solopreneur, like there is always something else that I want to do on my list. Like, and I realized when I first quit, like you talk about like that silence, you know, the hardest thing for me going from managing a team of 30 people that were at me all day, every day, loved it. Working from home by myself, silence, winter last year, lockdown, didn't go so well for me. So are high achievers, do they normally perform better in a team or as an individual, or that doesn't really impact things?
It depends. I think that would be dependent upon whether you're more of an extroverted high achiever or an introverted, I would say. So depending on that and what your preference is, a lot of, because I said before, you know, a lot of high achievers prefer to be in control. So working in a team environment, that's pretty hard to do because they want to micromanage and be like, that's not good enough. I would have done that this way. You didn't do that, you know. I would say it's dependent upon the individual and how they prefer to work. And a lot of them do like to work solo because also they like to overcompensate for their shortfallings in terms of they'll work and work and work until it's, you know, seen to be good enough.
Is it ever good enough is the question.
It's a question, isn't it?
Can you teach yourself, say theoretically I had a friend that was a high achiever, mm-hmm. are you able to work with them to give them tools or tips on like dealing with that and recognizing what's going on for people before it gets, you know, out of hand? You know, like what kind of things can someone do theoretically? If I had a friend that was a high achiever, what kind of things can we do to, you know, manage that better?
Yeah, so I'll come at that from two perspectives, what you can do if it's a friend and also if you are one. Very different. It can be very confronting if the other person is not aware of these traits and they, as I said before, you know, have that perfectionist tendencies or very high standards. If you're then coming in and supposedly attacking or saying, oh, you're always doing this or you're doing that, like, hey, how about you do this? I think it's important to set up the conversation first in a way that they feel safe and that you can actually create that open space where they can hear you, because a lot of the times if you approach somebody and they're not ready or they're not open or they're not aware that this is even happening, they'll get the walls up and it's like, oh, they don't even hear what's coming in. So creating that safe space first, and then you could possibly share what you're noticing from your end, being like, hey, look, I know that you always kill it with the work that you do and that you're phenomenal in terms of what you get done, and I really admire your ability to do that. And what I'm also noticing is that you know, it can often cause you to appear like you might be stressed or like you might be reaching the burning point or like your happiness is impacted and maybe that's taking a toll on you. I'm not sure, just that's what it looks like from the outside. And saying in a way that, you know, really has compassion with it would be a good way to.
Because my friend who might be a high achiever, are they super sensitive around to feedback, you know, like, because my friends, you know, or maybe someone closer than that, you know, for me personally, as soon as I've done something and I'm like that child, and you know, we laugh again in our house about I'm the kid that wants to bring home my report card and show you and wait for the feedback. I still do it, right? I brought home all of my work reviews. It doesn't matter. If I get a piece of paper or something from someone that says I did good, like, you know, like I said, the book reviews, anything like that, I'm like, see, it's proof, you know, like, see, and then I wait for someone else to tell me. But is it, you know, where by nature, because we don't kind of feel it inside ourselves, like sensitive if someone else, you know, because it's that external validation, right? Like, is that what's going on? Like, yeah, because I am super sensitive, or my friend.
I love how you referred to this. She's a friend too.
Just a friend.
Yes, absolutely, because high achievers tie their self-worth to their results. So if we're not achieving or we're not doing or we're, you know, compromised or, you know, somebody says something about us, we do become very sensitive to that, and we can it can become, I guess, a sticking point and all we think about, we become consumed with that. So going back to what I was going to say, the two parts, I didn't cover off the other one, I forgot that part. So how to deal with it if it is yourself is to become consciously aware of the fact that that is what's happening for you, and to be able to, as I mentioned before about the holistic psychologist, understand that it's your inner child programming from, you know, before you were age 7, and that it's really, you're an adult today and you can see things logically, but you're acting from that position, and it's totally different place, because a 7-year-old doesn't have the awareness or the coping strategies or the logic that, you know, I don't know how old you are, but, you know, for myself, 34, so
older than you, let's just say that. my 45 year old self is still like, I either go back to that, you know, I definitely am driven by that age group. And you and I have spoken about it, you know, like a lot of times in the past, is that I go back to how I felt back then. And I, you know, it's not like I have memories as such, but I know life was good. You know I was up on a pedestal. I know like that was the experience of my world. I was the first grandchild, you know, so yeah. I think, you know, all of these kind of things all added up. And then you kind of go, yeah, I'm so amazing. And then later on, like life happens, you know, experiences happen, you know, some not so fun. But you know, that space is where I go back when I want to be my best self as well. Like it can be a powerful force to help me get results. And it can also be the one that can chop them down, you know, so I don't experience like the satisfaction from achieving those results. Like I think for me personally, if I was talking about myself, I would say that it's the never a satisfaction in achieving things. Like there just doesn't seem to be, you did this, there's always something else. Is that, you know, like how you experience things or your friends that are high achievers?
Yes, it is. And it can be particularly debilitating if you are pulling, you know, whatever you're committed to, whether it's projects at work or running a business or whatever it might be, and some of those things don't come off as well because we're used to that success, right? So what the first thing is to identify the patterns, and it could be, you know, like for example my story with my dad. So notice where those stories started and to identify them so that you're aware of them. And then a really good thing, a really good technique, is celebrate everything. Like celebrate the losses, celebrate everything. So my coach taught me this a couple of months ago. She shared a story with me about a tennis player who was working with a coach, and they were encouraging her to keep her mind clean all the time, because when you're in a tennis match and then say you miss a shot or whatever, then if your mind is going, oh, I'm such an idiot, like then you're just going to go downhill dramatically. So what the coach said was, I want you to celebrate every win. So in your mind, even when you hit a shot out, you go, winner, like this. So what happened was that in the middle of this tennis match, she hits the shot out and she accidentally says out loud, winner, and it discombobulated everybody. And I think she ended up winning the point or something like that, because no one was so surprised.
Like, what's going on?
So like celebrating so that you're getting over that negative pattern or that judgment of yourself, or whether it's others or whatever it be, because that's where the disappointment, where the resentment, the anger, the frustration comes, is from that judgment piece. So if you can, you know, change the situation and approach it from a, well, I've won no matter what, could be really powerful as well.
Interesting. Now, you're working on some pretty cool projects, the Appreciation Project. Tell us about that one, because, yeah, like I think it's pretty cool. So I want other people to know, like, what other projects that you're up to.
So I just started delivering an appreciation program, which is designed to help with the Great Resignation, if you believe that's happening. So the companies that I'm talking to are saying that, you know, people are looking elsewhere, they're saying they don't feel appreciated, all this sort of thing. So the appreciation program is designed around the five love languages, believe it or not, and that's actually been taken into the workplace. So we all have one style of communication that we prefer to receive both appreciation and to demonstrate our appreciation for others. So it's equipping, you know, leaders, everybody. It's not just the HR thing, it's not just a leadership thing, it's an everybody approach. And it's designed to help employees feel valued and appreciated in the way that speaks to them as a person. So it could be that they like to receive gifts. Now, that's probably what a lot of people think is the highest. Gifts could be money, could be all that sort of thing, but it's actually not. I think words of affirmation was the highest scoring language that was preferred. So that means that you like to receive, you know, that kudos on your report card, Michelle.
I was gonna say, does not sound familiar at all. Like, and so what are the other four? Like, so we've got you know, that side of things, we've got the gifts, we've got the
words of affirmation. Yep. We've got acts of service. So at work, if you have acts of service, you like people to help you out. If you've got a challenging project, you want someone to say, hey, look, what can I do to assist you with this? And then we've got quality time. So you like to spend time with either your colleagues after work. Maybe you celebrate by having a drink at the end of the week or something like that, or you have an event on, dinner, golf, I don't know, whatever it might be. And then the other one is physical touch. But according to the research, that doesn't really play out very often in the workplace, unless it's like, you know, a fist bump to celebrate or a high five or a pat on the back, that sort of thing.
Yeah. That is like really cool, because the premise of that whole book is, if someone gives you, say, mine's words, words of affirmation, but if someone keeps giving me gifts and keeps giving me gifts at work, then I'm going, why are you giving me these gifts? Like, why aren't you giving me the feedback? So it's one of those things that when you understand it, and, you know, we often joke at home as well, like mine is words of affirmation. So I am loving cards, text message, all those kind of things. But on the flip side, if your partner is someone who's like, you know, acts of service, then, you know, if you send them cards, they're like going, why aren't you like cleaning the house? You know?
Yeah.
Like, and so, if you'd love me, you'd clean the house. And I'm like, you can get a cleaner to do that, but you can't get a cleaner to write you this. You know, like, so it's really interesting. I love that it's working out. You know, you realize you spend so much time with people at work. You know, I have spent far more time with people in the last 10 years in the workplace than what I have with my partner at home. Like, exactly. You know, and so making sure that that environment is something that's really positive and challenging for everybody, you know. Yeah. And, you know, I love that you've brought up, you know, there's all different kinds of names, whether it's the great resignation, the great reshuffle, you know, whatever the next moves are for people. And we're seeing, you know, I think it's that time of the year where people consider what's next. And I love that you've got this project. So if anyone's interested in working with Jane, like, please go and follow and connect with her on LinkedIn as well. And, you know, reach out and actually, you know, find out more about these projects, because what she does is awesome. And I want to say thank you for joining us. Is there any last words that you would like to, or tips that you would like to leave with people before we end the session?
I'd just say that give yourself a lot of compassion, particularly if you're a high achiever, because you're so hard on yourself, and you don't need to be. It's an old pattern that you can start to erase. That would be my number one tip.
Nice one. So on that note, be kind to yourself. Thank you, everyone, for joining the Good for Business show. It's been amazing. Jane, thank you so much for all of your wise words. And to all of the high achievers that are catching us on the replay, let us know in the comments, like, as you go along, so that we can, you know, come back and respond to those as well. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. And I will see everyone same time next week. Have a great one. Cheers.
Thanks, Michelle.
Bye.
Bye.
I don't want you to just listen to this episode. I want you to take action to grow your business. So let's connect on LinkedIn and continue the conversation over there. Find me at Michelle J. Raymond, and my company page is Good Trading Co. Cheers.